Hello, hello, it's Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I am so proud to bring you guys another amazing interview. Angelica's story just absolutely blew me away. Have you guys heard that quote, "My feminism will be inclusive or it will be bullshit"? Basically saying that if you practice a type of feminism that does not include people of color, that does not include trans people, that does not include people of different religious backgrounds, different body shapes, different ages, you're not really practicing real feminism. And I realized that I hadn't had a trans woman on the almost 2 years I've been doing this show until Angelica, my guest today. And that's not to classify her by her identity, because she is a multifaceted, incredible woman. You'll see how great her personality is in just a minute. But there's so much value in hearing different stories and hearing diverse perspectives and just trying to expand our thinking and expand our knowledge of other people's experiences. I think her response to the question I ask everyone at the end, when do you feel most beautiful? Her response has probably been the most powerful I've ever heard. The thing is, trans women are slowly gaining more and more visibility in mainstream media, which is fantastic, but trans women and trans men are still disproportionately impacted by suicide and by violence. I'm going to read a quote from the beautiful and very, very talented Laverne Cox. "It is revolutionary for any trans person to choose to be seen and visible in a world that tells us we should not exist." Angelica, I want to thank you for sharing your story. Your bravery and wisdom is very inspiring. I also very much appreciate your beauty tips. And since our conversation, I've become much more open to wearing glitter. So I thank you for that as well. Thank you everyone who started following Naked Beauty Planet on Instagram. I love hearing from all of you. Oh, and it's June, so let me not forget to wish everyone happy Pride. Okay, hope you guys enjoy the episode. And Angelica, you are also from New York.
Like I am. So I grew up on Lexington between 99th and 98th Street.
Okay. So
borderline Upper East Side.
And borderline Uptown.
Yes, exactly. So it's mostly considered El Barrio.
Oh, Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
I feel like my reference is like a Santana song. Is that really sad? You know the song, Maria? Yes. Yes. Like there was always this like romantic allure around Spanish. And every time we would drive by, I can remember so vividly in the summer, like people sitting out on their stoops playing games. Like
that's the stuff that used to piss me off, actually.
You were like, shut up.
I was like, stop it. And I swear to God, when it would become like 70 or 80 degrees, everyone would be hanging out in front of the building, blasting their boom boxes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, yeah. Can I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer in peace? Let me live my best life.
This is a very specific reference that I think you only really understand if you were in New York 2002, 2003. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when 50 Cent dropped his mixtape and literally every single car in New York was just like blaring,
blasting.
Like
yes.
In the club, like mm-hmm. Wangster before that.
Yep.
Like it was like 50 Cent mm-hmm. was like...
Well, I did hear a lot of 50 Cent... from my window.
Yeah.
But I also heard, of course, I heard the classics, Biggie, Tupac.
Yeah.
Me personally, Little Kim, DeBrat. Oh. That's the kind of shit that I was blasting
yeah.
on my own stereo.
Yes.
Was like
yes.
DeBrat and Little Kim.
Yes.
Much to the chagrin of my mother, Lisa.
I mean, it's so interesting because you're right. Growing up, we had Missy, DeBrat,
yes.
Little Kim.
Oh, and Missy. Oh, I feel bad.
Missy,
her out.
Yes.
Missy, misdemeanor.
So it's weird to me when people are like Nicki versus Cardi. I'm like, we had several. Like there's room.
Yes.
Like, why are they against each other?
Exactly. Why are we always? And I have a theory that, and this exists
Please
in Hollywood and in the music industry. we have this obsession with pitting women against each other.
So true.
And especially with women of color and especially with rappers.
Mm.
I don't quite understand it. Like, why do we have to create beef between Nicki and Cardi? Stop the comparisons.
Yeah.
Let them be. Let them be their own individual artists.
I honestly couldn't agree more.
I know.
But also, like, Azalea Banks is also she's interesting because she's super talented, but her personality and attitude has gotten in the way of her finding success. And I think she kind of bought into the cattiness early on. It seems like she's adjusted now.
Has she, though? She came for Cardi. Like, for no damn reason.
I know.
Like, don't come for me if I did not send for you, exactly. Is what I always say.
Yes.
Cardi is hood. Let her be hood.
I know.
She's not the most eloquent speaker. She's not the most well-written person.
And she doesn't claim to be. She's always owned who she is.
From day one.
Yeah.
Like, on her Instagram, which I followed her, like, forever ago. Prior to Love & Hip Hop.
Same. What a voice.
Like, let me tell you something. Like, I always used to live for her. Like, yeah, I live for her authenticity, her honesty, and just her brashness. Just live for her.
She's amazing.
Amazing. You better work.
It's so interesting that you bring up this sense of, like, having a voice. And I think it's the kind of thing, so this is segueing into, like, why I wanted to have you on the podcast, because I think you have a really powerful and authentic voice. And I don't know if you realize that you do, but, like, when you speak, people really stop and listen. Mm. And it's, like, a very powerful, it's an amazing quality to have.
I did not know that.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, when can I talk about this meeting
please.
That happened?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I just want to.
Yeah, totally.
You know, we were at work in a very kind of public setting, and we were doing trans sensitivity training. And then I was sitting way in the back. I came late.
I didn't even know you were there.
Yeah, I came late. And then I heard a voice on the mic say, as a trans woman, and I was like, who's talking? Like, I didn't. And then I saw that it was you, and I saw how, like, in that moment you were your such true self. Mm-hmm. Like, you were speaking from your heart in this really powerful way. And I'm sure you could see the emotion in the room. I mean, people were in tears. People were on video conference in tears, you know?
Yeah.
And there is such power in just speaking your truth and speaking from your heart. And that's why we love people like Cardi. And that's why I think you're, you know, such a powerful woman. It's like, it's this really amazing quality.
I sat there in that room and I was listening to my colleagues telling their stories about, one person in particular, I won't say her name just to respect her privacy, but she has a trans nephew, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
She was in tears and just so distraught and scared for her family member, for what they're enduring and what's to come and all of these things. And at the end of it, she was like, honestly, I just want to figure out how to support my family member. And then two other folks were speaking. And what really brought me to tears, what really just a dagger to the heart, was when we went over the statistics of trans women of color being murdered. And the suicide rates, and I'm getting chills. and immediately, the reason why I got so emotional is because I recognized that could have been me at any point in time. That very well could have been me, and it was me. Like, I have had, truth be told, I have had suicide attempts. Mm. I've struggled with depression and anxiety and PTSD for most of my life, and I'm just amazed that I'm still even here. So to see those statistics really just, like, brought it home for me. And as everyone was telling their stories, I sat in that room and I thought to myself, I would be such a hypocrite if I didn't speak up and say something to my colleagues. I felt as though I was in a safe space. Granted, it was a
It was an amphitheater
at Viacom. Like, for the listeners, for the public that has not seen the amphitheater, it's huge. It's not like some small conference room. Like,
not at all.
It's an actual theater within the Viacom building.
It's like a Roman amphitheater. It's like, you're on the mic.
Literally,
there's like a flat screen TV.
Yep.
The size of like someone's bedroom with like people dialed in
literally
from other off. I mean, it was like a very open forum.
Yes. And it's, for such an open forum, it felt
so there was a lot intimate. Of love in the space. Yes. I could feel that.
And I just felt safe and comfortable enough to be able to share my story, because everyone was under the impression that they didn't meet a trans person ever in their life.
So I was going to ask you, was that your first time kind of expressing that out loud at work?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So my first corporate job, I was outed by a colleague, and this is during the MySpace days. This is during the MySpace days.
And so when you say outed, what does that mean exactly? Like they told...
So I discovered a conversation. Do you remember the MySpace comments section on everyone's page? So I discovered a conversation between my colleague and my colleague's wife.
What?
And it was something along the lines of, yeah, she has an Adam's apple, so that's like a clear indication that she's a man. And
what?
I discovered this on her MySpace profile page, and I sat on my computer in disbelief. I broke into tears, and to like have to go into work and try to ignore that was just such a traumatizing thing for me. And I was doing a lot of advocacy work in the media space, so I did two documentaries for MSNBC. I was on Oprah, which is
what? Wait, literally record scratch, stop, hold up, wait a minute. Do you realize that I shook her hand last week and I'm still shook? Like, you've met the queen.
I met the queen.
I was watching the royal wedding, and like when she walked in, I was so much more hyped than Meg. I was like, yes,
Oprah. You were more hyped for Oprah than you were for Meghan.
Wait, when were you on Oprah?
So this was in 2007.
Why are you doing this raggedy little podcast?
This is not raggedy.
Oh,
I'm doing this from a homegirl, Brooke.
Wait, you were on Oprah in 2007?
In 2007, when she still had her television show. This is pre-OWN.
So like millions of people saw this. What were you on Oprah for?
So in 2007, I was contacted by the producers over at Oprah about doing an episode revolving around trans families. And so it was me and another trans man that were on the show. We actually did the same documentary together for MSNBC.
Who was the...
His name is Jake.
Jake, okay.
And so I went on there. I was actually homeless at the time. I was living in this amazing nonprofit organization called Ali Forne Center.
Okay.
So they're a shelter system for LGBT youth. They are absolutely amazing.
Wow. Are they all over the country?
But they're all over New York.
New York,
so
okay.
They're hoping to expand more because the homeless epidemic in the city is insane. But anyway, back to Oprah. So I was so excited to meet the queen.
Yeah,
her
energy alone.
I know. Well, the thing was, I had a rather bad experience.
Really?
And I actually discussed this with Janet Mock. Hey, Janet girl. She was asking me a line of questions. Not very much. I actually noticed that she shied away from speaking to me, and that might have been because I didn't have any family members present, which we'll get to later.
Okay.
But when she was asking me questions, they were rather condescending.
And give me an example.
I'll give you a perfect example. It wasn't really even a question. It was more of a statement with a question mark at the end. I don't know. So I'll tell you what she said. She was like, so you're a boy with a penis.
What?
Which makes you a boy.
What?
And I was, yeah.
Wait. This is 2007?
2007.
No.
She misgendered me on national television.
If I had pearls to clutch.
I know. I'm clutching my invisible ones.
What?
And that's my heart sank.
Oh my
sank.
God. Oh my God.
My heart immediately sank. And think if Jake is just so happens to be listening, thank you, Jake, for stepping in. Because I was, most people that know me, like if I'm in an uncomfortable situation, I'll kind of just like clam up and be like, yeah.
Right.
So when she said that to me, I did the exact same thing. I kind of just like shoulders up and I was just like, and then Jake was like, well, actually, no, that's not true. And I was like, and he was like 16 at the
time.
I was like, thank you, Jake. Like you my homie.
Wow.
But that was such a pivotal moment.
Wow.
And it actually kind of scared me back into, I don't want to say a closet because I was never in a closet ever, darling. But I definitely think it hindered my want to be an advocate for my community.
Yes.
So and vocally. And so,
how old were you at the time?
I was 21.
I would argue, potentially traumatic thing to experience on such a public platform. But I would also argue that an experience like that probably in a lot of ways helped inform who you are today. And you're right, because you're like, this has happened to me on national television with Oprah. So
very much that,
you know, it's amazing how the things that happen to you kind of all end up making you, they give you character.
Exactly.
Right? So, okay, so let's go all the way back. So you went to Harvey Milk High School.
I did.
Tell me a little bit about Harvey Milk.
So Harvey Milk High School is a phenomenal, they're the first nationally accredited high school for LGBT youth. And so I want to preface that with, they do not shy away from welcoming students that identify as cis heterosexuals.
Got it.
They do welcome students. I went to school with some of them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the school is mainly for folks that identify as LGBT,
right.
Gender nonconforming, mm-hmm. gender non-binary.
Yeah.
And so the story that led up to me going to the high school is sad. I believe it was when I was 13 years old, I had a suicide attempt. I was going to Catholic school, and with that came
Catholicism.
I know.
Heavy for anyone.
Organized religion in general, which I really shy away from for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But long story short, I was bullied tremendously on a day-to-day basis, and with my depression led to a suicide attempt. And so I was admitted to Lenox Hill Hospital.
Wow.
And I really wish I could remember my doctor's name, because the doctor that was assigned to me, she was the one that told me about the Harvey Milk High School. And I was like, what? Like, shut up. There's a high school for LGBT youth where they can feel safe and comfortable. Like, sign me up. Like, sold, check, please. Like, let's go. Like, I want to go now. So I ended up doing an interview there. And keep in mind, in 2000, Harvey Milk was much, much smaller. I believe they had, in total, a room for 75 students.
In the
entire high school. And that's including the GED program.
Wow.
So, the waiting list was crazy, crazy
long.
But
of course, you're smart and charming.
Even at 13 years old, I was like,
you're like, I've got
God
this.
Damn it, I'm getting in there.
Yeah.
Like, come hell or high water, I am getting in there.
Right.
And I aced my interview. And that's really when, that was such a pivotal time in my life, because that's where I was able to put a name to what it was that I was feeling, because I'd always known that I was a female.
How early?
Oh, early. It's and folks always ask me, like, how did you know? Or
It just was.
It's very much like how if I'm speaking to a cis heterosexual person, a female, for instance, it's like, well, how did you know that you were a female, or how did you know that you liked boys?
Right.
It's
not like a conscious decision. It's just who you are.
Exactly. But I think I think society complicates that and makes it out to be this thing that's so unrecognizable, when in actuality, we can all relate to that feeling of just like coming into your own, and knowing who you are.
Right. Yeah.
That's all it really is. It's such a simple concept, but again, people.
But I think that probably at a younger age, you're forced to confront who you truly feel to be inside in a way that other people may not come to until like their 20s and 30s, right? So you're dealing with these very adult feelings at a really young age.
Very much so.
Right?
I had to grow up at a very early age.
Yeah.
And I think that adds to my personality and why I'm a big kid. I own this. I'm a child in a grown woman's body. And I think that's because I definitely didn't have a great childhood at all. Mm.
Did your parents not react well to the news?
Well, I never met my father. So my father was incarcerated, I believe at the time that I was born. And Lisa was 18.
And Lisa's your mom?
Yes. I call her Lisa for a number of reasons. Yeah, it's just like crazy, like looking back at it all. And
I mean, I think we've come a long way in terms of understanding and people having even awareness of the right language. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that for Lisa, being such a young mom, she may not like, and I don't know anything about her, but knowing how much we know now, thinking about then, and just access to that awareness, I think really impacts your ability to like understand and empathize, even with your own child.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely understand. And I recognize that it could not have been easy for an 18-year-old mother to become a mother.
Right.
Let alone to give birth to a child that was assigned the wrong gender at birth and not really having the kind of access to the internet back then, or to television shows or documentaries or anything. Like, there wasn't very much information that she could reach out on and learn about this. However, I truly feel that if you have a child, you love that child no matter what.
Yes, regardless. And you didn't feel that she
definitely not.
Mm. Are you in contact at all?
She contacted me about 2 years ago, and she attempted to do a meetup, and I took a day or two to think about it, and I got back to her. I was like, sure. But I was so in my emotions and all over the place. I was in the process of looking for a new apartment. But yeah, she just like contacted me at the wrong time. And I had posted on my Facebook, which I shake my head at. I regret this. But I was like, made this crazy status update. Like, where do you go to meet the woman that abandoned you? And I don't want to have her in my house, but I don't feel comfortable meeting her at her house. It was just like this whole like post that I made on Facebook.
You probably just needed to get it out, right?
I did.
It's such a heavy thing to deal with.
It was such a heavy thing to deal with, especially like with the process of moving. Like, I think there's three things in life that are the most emotional, which is like a death in your life, moving, and something else. So I was like, moving.
Very emotional.
So emotional.
Yeah.
And so to this day, I'm not entirely sure who did it, but someone contacted Lisa and said, this is what Angelica said. And so I get a text message the day that we're supposed to meet up, like, all I wanted to do was mend fences, but it seems that you want to throw a bunch of vitriol at me, and God only knows what else, so I won't be coming tomorrow. I still love you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, girl, bye. Like,
well, saying that she loves you is something, right? Because you realize that some kids don't even get that.
I absolutely agree with you. My whole thing is, and the reason why we've had this shattered relationship is when I was, 18 years old, I was dating a guy that I had yet to disclose to. Mm-hmm. I had every intention of doing so, but there's no right or wrong way to disclose to somebody, you know?
Like, and it's like how early, it's like, to say it's super early on, it's kind of like, okay, someone asked you, thank you.
Yeah, like, I'm not asking about anything between your legs, so why, why do you expect to know what's going on between mine?
Right, it's like
so
rude.
Early on.
It's like almost rude, right?
Yeah,
so,
like, I'm actually offended when guys are like, why didn't you tell me sooner? I'm like, because it was none of your damn business sooner.
No matter what's going on, like, it's none of your business. Like, we literally just met. It's not exactly first date conversation.
Exactly, right? Thank you.
Yeah.
Can we just have a cheers to that? Truly,
like, toast.
Long story short, Lisa found out, and she gave me an ultimatum of I can either leave the house, and I had nowhere else to go.
She found out about your relationship,
or that she found out that I was seeing someone that did not know.
Okay. Before 18, when you, like, did you at one point disclose to her?
I actually never.
Okay.
So, interesting.
Did you
story.
Start presenting? Like, when did that change in terms of, like, your presentation? And
yeah. So, I had. it's so funny because I'd come out as gay. I'd identified as gay because that's all that I knew.
Right.
At that point in time, as a young child, and again, there wasn't the internet, so you just hear it through word of mouth.
Yeah.
And kids are cruel, so they would call me gay, faggot, this, that. So, like, unfortunately, that's how I found out about what that word was and what it meant. And so I thought to myself, well, that must be what I am.
Mm.
You know, as a child, you're always searching for your identity and to understand yourself a little bit more. And to answer your question, I never actually disclosed to Lisa that I was trans, or that I felt as though I was born in the wrong body. I never told her that. She found out on her own, and then she also went through my clothes. So I was wearing female clothes, but much baggier. So like, if I would go to the Gap and buy jeans from the women's section and Forever 21, but they would be women's clothes, but they would be a little more tomboyish.
Right, right.
A little tomboy chic. So she discovered all of those clothes, and I had a couple of items of makeup, and she was like, so here's the situation. You can either leave, which I had nowhere to go, or we're cutting your hair. And my hair was like just about as, it's like way past my shoulders at this point. Like, so that's about how long my hair was.
It's interesting that cutting the hair, it seems like it's almost symbolic, right? It's like, well, if we cut your hair, then you'll cut all of this out and start acting.
Cut out all the female or the feminine aspects.
Right. And you're like, I'll just have a chic pixie cut.
Okay.
Like, it's not going to change anything. Like, cut it off.
Giving you Mia Farrow, Rosemary's Baby
realness. Right.
Like,
yes.
I always remember that this one episode of America's Next Top Model.
I used to live for that show, early seasons.
Same.
Everything.
Same. Which actually I was on as well.
That girl, what were you doing on Top Model? It's been fabulous.
Same. So, the same exact episode that Isis was discovered on, I was in that, that episode as well.
No way.
So Tyra wanted to do a homeless themed shoot. And so she,
I think I remember this and I,
you might love
looking back. This. It's kind of problematic.
I know.
A homeless themed shoot. Like, I remember this.
Her talk show too. She was like, I'm going to sleep on the streets for a night. I was like,
oh my gosh. Tyra Banks's talk show was so problematic.
So
there's an episode where she like reveals her hair for the first time. Have you seen that? She's like,
I have.
She like walks up with her hair like what? She's like, this is my hair. And it was like coming up next, like Tyra. And it was like, they were teasing it. There were like literal commercials to be like Tyra Banks without any fake hair.
And it's dun, like, dun, dun.
What? How backwards were we?
I know.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's what the crowd was living for at the time. And also like to her and just to back her up a little bit, like, you know, black women have always had, and we were actually having this discussion about hair yesterday.
Mm-hmm, we were.
Where we always feel as though straight hair is the way to go, right? Like, it's, you know, it's very much like a white woman thing. And so, like, we try to blend as white women in some way.
I want to get into, like, our personal perceptions on this, but I do think that one of the things that needs to be addressed when you're talking about like hair extensions stuff. Like lots of white women have hair extensions. Like I think a lot of people think it's like a thing that women of color do, but it's they all have hair extensions.
White women wear wigs too.
Right.
White women wear extensions.
Yeah. Yeah. So just want to put that out there because I think a lot of times people say that it's like always like black women trying to look white, and it's like white women live for some like silky Hawaiian
and
22 inch weave
and
too.
A light tan, you
exactly.
know, like,
yeah. So that's something that we are all afflicted by of all races. But yes. Okay. So, but yes, also within, and you're Puerto Rican and Dominican, right? Right.
And a distant Danish.
And distant
Danish. I attribute that to my tallness.
You are very tall. Yeah.
And I have like freckles.
Right.
And I'm the lightest of my immediate family.
Interesting. And and I want to talk about colorism within the community as well.
For
but
sure.
I think that there is like ingrained in you from an early age that straight hair is better because I remember getting my hair straightened for special like picture day and, you know, it's like, okay, we're going to hot comb your hair. And so you just begin to associate like, oh, it's better when it's straighter.
That's precisely what I felt growing up. I would watch Lisa and my grandmother, for instance, relaxing their hair all the time. I don't even, and it's not to say that they didn't rock their natural hair, but just looking back, I don't recall ever seeing either, mostly my mother, Lisa, with her hair in its natural, like, curly state. Because it was like, borderline fro, like, the way that her hair was.
Right.
It was much kinkier than mine. And so, watching that, I just instinctively thought that straight hair was more beautiful. And so, for years, probably when I started growing out my hair at 14, I would always flat iron my hair. And I actually did. I chemically relaxed my hair like once or twice.
Oh, wow.
And it wasn't until maybe like 3 or 4 years ago that I started rocking my hair in its natural waviness. And I started getting all these compliments from people. They were just like, oh my God, I love your hair.
Yeah.
What did you do to it? Like, is it naturally like that? I'm like, yes, honey, this is mine. Like,
all mine.
She's all mine. Yes. Grown out of my head.
Exactly.
And I found such comfort again in my hair. I always have found comfort in my hair, but I feel embracing my hair
and it's natural.
The way that it naturally is.
Absolutely.
Is like priceless. It's priceless.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trade it for anything.
So important. Let's talk about, so you are half Dominican, half Puerto Rican, and a little bit Danish.
A little bit Danish, yes.
And the deepness or like the how dark your complexion is kind of a measure of beauty within the Latin community as well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The Latin community, the African-American community.
Asian community.
Asian.
All
and
cultures.
It just baffles me. I know we were discussing this earlier. I follow a makeup influencer called Nima Tang. Go follow her. Like, she
I have a link to her in the show notes.
So fleeky. Like, her makeup is always on point. Her skin is gorgeous. And she just so happens to be a very, very dark complexion. Mm-hmm. Like she's what we call like black purple.
Right.
And I think that her complexion
she's gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Even if she didn't have the facial features that she does, I would still think
her
to myself
skin alone
that complexion
dead.
Is
yeah.
stunning.
Yeah.
But she's mentioned in her own community she's faced some racism from her own people of color, which
right.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
I personally I don't feel as though I've experienced any sorts of...
Well, you're really fair.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But
I do recognize that.
Yeah. And but growing up, did you hear people say, like, don't mm-hmm. be in the sun too long, or say that someone was less attractive because they had darker skin?
Yes, I have. I have heard that, and I have been told that, like, don't stay out in the sun too long. And in my mind, I'm like, why? Like, I want to get my tan on. If I'm going to Miami, if I'm going to Turks and Caicos,
of
I want to get a tan. I want to get dark. I think dark is beautiful.
Yeah.
But there's so many people that do not, and especially people of color, like, they don't see it the same way, which I don't understand it.
I think things are getting better.
Absolutely. Like, the world is becoming much more inclusive. We're starting to recognize that beauty comes in all shapes, sizes, colors.
Right. Yes. And even when, like, Fenty, like, people were, like,
surprised.
It's like, yeah, if you make stuff that actually, like, fits a range of skin tones, of course it's going to be a success, because we've been criminally underserved.
For far too long.
For far too long. So,
how many of these makeup brands have been around for, and yet you still have like a limited amount of shades available in foundation?
And Fenty, with their first product launch, like
sold out. Like, take all my money.
Yes.
Like, take it. Fenty Beauty, Savage Fenty. Like, take it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I've heard amazing things about Savage. Like, growing up, who were your beauty idols? Like, who did you look to be like, this is literally my look?
So I had the immeasurable honor of meeting the iconic Kevin O'Quan.
Oh.
When I was a student at Harvey Milk.
Stop it.
First
of all, his
rest
book.
Rest in peace.
I know. His book, Making Faces.
I know. I have it. It's on my coffee table.
Game changer.
Like,
his concealer, wearing it right now.
Okay.
Live for Kevin. When did you meet him?
I met him when I was probably like 14 or 15 years old.
Girl, okay, you've met Kevin, Tyra, you've met Oprah. Like, I can't.
Oh, I didn't meet Tyra, actually.
Okay, you were just on the show.
I was just on the show, but I did meet Mr. J. I met Miss J several times.
Amazing.
But yeah, like, so. And Kevin was such a kind, humble, sweet person. And I really, I wish I would have known back then, like, how big of a presence he was.
Yes.
Because, like, I was a 14-year-old kid. I was like, oh, my God, there's a makeup artist coming.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize to what extent, like, his reach was.
Yeah.
And so his techniques are foolproof, flawless.
Yeah. Yeah.
His line is everything.
Yeah.
Like, shout out to the people that are like
so expensive,
still making,
but it's
worth it.
Yeah, so good.
It's so worth it.
Hey guys, hope you're loving the episode so far. Taking a very quick break to give a shout out to the sponsor, Curology Skincare. I am on month number 3 with this product. It's a customized skincare solution just for you. Whether you have hyperpigmentation, fine lines, wrinkles, acne, you take a little mini quiz, they pair you with a provider. This person sticks with you. Like, I literally can message her whenever I have a question. She's been super responsive so far. It's a really good program, and I think if you don't have time to get to a dermatologist or you can't afford it, I would highly recommend Curology. There's a special link just for my listeners in the show notes, so check out that link. With that link, all the Naked Beauty listeners get their first month free. They just have to pay for shipping. It's a really great product. I would not recommend it if it was not. All right, let's get back into the discussion with Angelica.
Also, I cannot wait for Pose on
Me
FX.
Me too. I'm so excited for that.
Hey, Janet.
Yeah.
Like, literally,
I'm so
excited. Like, I'm so lit about it, because finally we're really going to understand, like, where all of the terminology and dance moves.
Right, because, like, it's been co-opted so much into mainstream culture that people, it's like, you are taking language from a culture that you know nothing about, and you need to understand the history.
Yes. Like, when Cardi says, That comes from the ballroom scene, Hunty comes from the LGBT scene.
Pretty much everything.
Yes.
Realness. Yes.
And I talking about appropriation. I feel as though when people are saying these words, it is borderline appropriation on
absolutely
within the LGBT community.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate that it's becoming more mainstream because people are starting to understand the community more and embrace the community.
Absolutely. And I think RuPaul's Drag Race has played a really big part of that.
That's problematic as fuck as well.
Well, because RuPaul fucked up.
Okay.
And I love you, Ru, but just do better. I feel like he owned the... Well, we should explain what he said.
Yes. RuPaul did an interview. I can't remember if it was New Now Next or something. But anyway, he was asked if he would ever welcome an openly trans female or a cisgendered female. And cisgender, for those of you that don't know, is folks that are born assigned a certain gender at birth and identify as such in adulthood.
Right.
And RuPaul responded with, no, drag is more of a boys' club. I would definitely not openly... And I was just like, what? Like, what? Like
a boys, like, and also that choice of word.
Like, I know. I was just like, girl, be better. Like,
yeah.
It just like it blew my mind. And then he came back with this apology and like, you know, trans women have done so much for this community, which we have.
Of course.
Google Marsha P. Johnson. Google Sylvia Rivera.
Yes.
Like, let's bring it back and pay homage to the women, the trans women.
Yes, absolutely.
That.
Pioneers.
Really pioneered.
Yes.
For us. Like, ugh. It's just like, I get goosebumps talking about it because it frustrates me so much that even with it, we were talking about colorism in our own community, but also within the LGBT community, we experience transphobia within the community.
Right. Right.
Which is crazy to me.
Because it's like you understand what it feels like to be
ostracized for simply loving someone of the same gender or both genders. So why? Ugh. I have been called a tranny by gay guys. I've been it's been such an interesting experience, but it's also educated me because I also realized that the T portion of LGBT really does not belong in there. So lesbian, gay, bisexual, those are sexual orientations. Transgender, gender non-binary, gender non-conforming, those are gender identities.
That is
two completely different things.
That is such an amazing point that I've literally never thought about.
Yeah, because most people wouldn't. And I started to learn about it once I was figuring out my own identity and coming into my own self, and I just thought to myself one day, I was like, wait a minute, like, transgender is a gender identity, not a sexual orientation.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
why is it looped in? And I understand there's more power in numbers, you know, but like, and we need to support each other, absolutely, but it's not the same thing, people. Like, it's just not. And also, the T portion gets left out of stuff a lot. Like the lesbian and gay center, where's the transgender in there? Mm. You'll find often that when people are talking about the LGBT community, they mainly focus on the LGB and sort of leave out the T in the conversation.
Right.
So we're always sort of left in the shadows and not brought up enough, or we're not given a voice or a platform to speak about our lives and about our struggles and our issues. It's very frustrating. It's very, very frustrating.
Yes, I can imagine. So there's an amazing woman that I met at South by Southwest, a Black trans woman who has a podcast, and she was just talking about the power of telling her story. I will link to her podcast in the show notes for everyone. But I do think it's so important to create more platforms for all, like, different type, like, every single walk of life.
Yes.
And that's the only way that we're going to get better. And exactly. I think that a lot of people are like, I don't know, like, do you feel like people kind of tiptoe around it, or they're uncomfortable, or?
I found that people tend to be very brazen with their line of questioning, which is problematic as fuck at times.
Right.
Because people tend to focus on the wrong things. They're asking the wrong questions.
Right, right. They're getting too technical and physical. And you're like,
they want to know about the surgery. Like, the first thing that they want to know about is surgeries. And in my mind, I'm like, sweetie, I'm not asking about
your medical history.
I'm not asking about what you've had done. Like, be respectful of my journey and be respectful of the fact that I'm choosing to share something very deeply personal with you, and ask the right questions. Don't just ask whatever comes to your mind, because when you do that, it makes me feel some type of way, and it makes me feel as though you're not really trying to understand. You're more so just trying to nitpick and be nosy and ask these really salacious questions.
Yeah. So in that situation, do you check people?
Oh,
okay, this is a teachable moment. They're ignorant. Let me help them. Or are you just like, I can't even?
So when I was much younger, I felt as though it was my duty to educate people. Mm-hmm. Like, and that was me being not only young, but also me wanting to genuinely just educate folks, because it wasn't being discussed back then. Like, back in the early 2000s, nobody was talking about trans men and women.
Right.
Or gender non-binary. And so my whole thing was, okay, if people are asking about this, I can absolutely, like, answer questions and help them understand. But then as I got older and started to become more self-aware and confident.
You're like, it's not my job.
Like, it's not my job. Yes, it is not my job to educate the entire world.
Yes.
Like, I did my part. I feel as though, like, I did my part well before, like, a lot of people were doing it. So, I wanted to allow myself to tell my story on my own terms.
Mm.
And I feel so strong and confident and comfortable in knowing that I'm in a place where I can choose if and when I want to disclose to someone.
Right, right.
And I can check them if they're like, well, girl, did you have the surgery? I'm like, well, it's none of your damn business.
It's none of your
but
damn
what
business.
Else? Yes. What else? Like, what else would you like to know aside from, like, what surgeries I've had?
Right.
If any.
Right.
Because surgery is for anyone, not just trans men and women. Surgery is an option, and surgery is something that is a personal choice.
Yeah, I mean, if I met half of the women that I interact with, when I was like, so what have you done to your faces? Is it Botox here and a little Restylane here? Mm-hmm. And, like, it seems like you've done, they would be so offended. They would be like, why are you all up in my face?
Yes.
And it's like, why can't people extend that same courtesy
to trans women and men? Like, it. Again, like, something that boggles my mind.
Okay, well, I know you're a beauty girl, because you're doing face masks, you're doing amazing make, like, you do it all. So I have to ask you, what are the three beauty products or beauty trends that you're obsessed with?
Okay, so my first beauty must-have is the MAC Long Last Liner.
Is that a pencil or a liner?
So it's a liquid liner.
Liquid, okay.
It's a liquid liner with a very thin brush tip.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first ever makeup things that I first started to do was
when your friend
eyeliner.
Kevin Aquan taught you. I mean, because you dropped that name earlier.
Rest in peace, Kevin. I miss you. No, but, like, going through his book. And then also I was obsessed, again, with Christina Aguilera.
She did have a very strong liquid winged liner.
Yes.
I remember it vividly.
I mean, Moulin Rouge, hello.
Yes.
Like, everything.
Yeah.
And Sarah Michelle Gellar, she would have, like, this tiny little, like, winged liner that I would
like
live
that flick.
For. Yes,
and
just like
I think you need a liquid liner to get that really precise flick. It's hard to get with the pencil.
Exactly. So what I first started doing was I was playing around with a pencil liner just to get the gist of it, because I was doing it freehand, and it took me forever to perfect my wing liner, my cat eye. And so years went by, I would try different products, and I came across the MAC Long Last Liner, and it does not move.
It's waterproof.
For anything.
Yeah.
It's actually not even marketed as waterproof.
It's just
a liner
that stays
for days.
That's, like, amazing.
I mean, this is borderline embarrassing, but, like, I've fallen asleep, like, drunkenly at night with that liner on, and I wake up and it's like Hashtag You're I woke like, up like this. Like
ready for brunch.
It is still sitting. Like it's yes. still there. It yes. has not moved.
Yes. So you know who else has a really it. Good cat eye? Adele.
Yeah.
Every Adele video, I'm like, let me get into this cat
day,
eye.
All day, every yeah. day. Like, that cat eye is just always perfection. Perfect. Always and Ariana perfect. Grande, too.
Oh, does she? I feel like her ponytail makes more of a statement to me than the liner.
That's true.
I'm like, are you going to change up the ponytail?
Ever? Like, Ariana, girl.
It's fine. I'll let her have her ponytail. What other beauty products do you love?
So, also, the Clinique Stay Matte Hydrator.
Everyone loves Clinique skincare. My last guest was like, I'm a Clinique skincare girl.
Okay, so not only do I love the Clinique skincare, I also love Clinique Happy. And I was actually really offended when somebody was like, oh, that's like an old lady perfume.
It's a classic.
I was like, excuse me, it's a classic. Like, it's so fresh and so citrusy. But anyway, back to the hydrator. I tend to have a bit of oily skin. I sweat a lot naturally. So it just kind of gives me that like nice matte mm-hmm. finish. It's almost like a primer.
Nice.
So it just like gets me ready for the day.
Okay, amazing.
And then also the Boscia Luminizing Black Mask. You've probably seen it.
Of course.
Online. Like it's everything. It just sucks out all the dirt and impurities and ickiness, and it's a little pricey. It's like $34.
I know.
But
the only reason I've
like
tried it is because Sephora gives it away
yeah.
when you like buy stuff.
Exactly.
So I've like literally like used one sample and I was like, this is great. Yep. Then I saw the price and I was like, I'm gonna stick to my like Rasool clay masks that I mix with water.
That's fair.
But so it's worth it, you think?
It's so worth it.
Okay.
I mean, I've definitely noticed a difference in terms of afterwards, like my skin feels fresher. I can, you know, when you like take off a nose strip and
you, like,
you just
stare
kind of
this,
stare. Yes, yeah. Like I'll sometimes do that with my mask.
Very
and I'll be
satisfying.
Like, oh my God, I can see the little impurities, you little bastards.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. So there's that. And then also a good friend of mine named Fred Connor, shout out to fred.nyc. He has a salon downtown on 192 Orchard Street.
Okay.
So he does my hair, and he always does an amazing job. But he also has a skincare line of his own.
Nice.
And it's very inclusive of women of darker complexions, which I was like, this is genius. I don't know why. Like,
is this pre-Fenty?
This is pre-Fenty.
Okay, so he was on the wave.
Yes, like he was totally on it. But like he has something called a mineral sheer tinted moisturizer, which I'm wearing right now.
Oh, wow. It doesn't look like you're wearing anything.
Exactly. But it just gives me a nice little glow, a nice little tint of like gold flecks here and there, but it's not heavy. It's really, really light. Moisturizes my skin, which is really important. We were talking about like how you couldn't believe I was 31 yesterday.
Okay. Because Angelica, I literally thought that this is your first job out of college. When you told me you were 31, I was like, I was
dead.
So you attribute it. I think some of it has to be genetic, but you think moisture has just played a big role.
I definitely think that it's probably my genes. And I can't thank Lisa for very many things, but when it comes to my genes and, you know, she did give me some good genes in terms of my skincare. But also moisturize. Like I always tell people this. I'm like, moisturize. It's so important, especially as you get older.
Definitely.
And so my last little tidbit is Lush. Anything Lush.
Yeah.
Really anything, but I especially love the Lush Secret Arts Jelly Balm. Just a little self-care.
I don't know that one. Oh, is it a bath bomb?
Yes. It is a bath bomb. It's
do you have a bathtub?
I do.
Fancy. Okay, that's rare.
And I need a bathtub. Like I grew up with a bathtub, so I can't move into an apartment and just have a shower. It feels
like a lack of luxury.
Odd. I know. It just feels odd to me. So yes, Lush anything, but especially their Secret Arts Jelly Balm.
I will have to try that.
It literally turns your water into jelly.
That's so cool.
It's kind of a pain in the ass to
clean
wash
your
it off
tub,
afterwards.
I'm sure.
Because it's also dark, like it's black.
Oh, wow.
It's like
and it just, like, hydrates your skin?
Yes. Like, I literally walked out of that feeling just, like buttery cocoa goodness.
Interesting. Like, okay, I have to try this. Like,
yes, I would highly recommend it.
All their products, everything I've tried from Lush has
literally
been fantastic.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like, another store that I walked into, and I was like, okay, take all my money.
Exactly. I know. So, okay, and then beauty trends that you are really over.
Okay, so this whole feathered brow thing.
What
trend.
Is that?
I'm really utterly confused by it. I don't get it. I'm all about like makeup artists.
Yeah,
expressing
we should
themselves.
Explain. It's hard to explain.
It's
though.
So hard to explain. Like they essentially like brush their eyebrows
to look
into,
like
feather shapes,
like bird feathers.
Yes, bird feathers.
It's so weird.
And it's so odd.
Have you ever seen it in real life? Beyond beauty bloggers, I've never seen it in real life.
I've never seen it in real life either.
So that's why I'm like, is it like the squiggle brow? Is it like not a real thing?
You know, it's like...
It's just bad, yeah.
If that died out tomorrow, I would not be upset. I would just be like, hey, rest in peace. Like, you had your moment. Moving on.
Yeah, I feel you.
Let's talk about glitter brows.
Yeah. Oh. I feel like you wear glitter really well. Every time I put on glitter, I'm like, no, not working. And every time I see a picture of you with glitter anything, I'm like, this looks really fab.
Oh my God, that firming mask that I have, I feel so bad. Oh, Glam Glow. So yeah, Glam Glow had a collaboration with My Little Pony, and that's the mask that I think you're referring to. It's like bright hot pink
with glitter.
And has glitter in it. And
really
I was
amazed.
Just like, oh my God, I found a mask that matches my personality. Perfect.
Exactly, exactly. Any other beauty trends you're totally over?
I'm happy to see that the sorry, Snicky, but I'm happy to see that the Snicky poof is now over. Do you remember Bumpets?
Of course.
Why was that a thing? Like, why? No, honestly, like, why was that a thing?
It's interesting because, like, it was Bumpets were obviously very lame. But then I feel like Amy Winehouse, when she came out, her hair was cool. But,
yes.
Like, only on her.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
It's like that was a signature thing of Amy's, and she rocked it so well. But then everyone and their mother started trying to do the Snicky look. And I was just like, no, just don't. Just please.
Just, yeah, that's...
No.
So very happily in the past.
Yes, that I'm like, rest in peace, you're done, like, never to see you again. Other than that, I'm all about people expressing themselves, especially with their hair, with their
yeah.
makeup. So I try not to be too negative and be like, mm.
I think one of the things that I've realized about like trends and personal taste, like there's this famous quote that says elegance is refusal.
Mm.
And I think that the reason why I ask people like the trends that they're over is because I think that silently in our heads,
judging.
Well, we're all thinking like, I'm really over this. Mm-hmm. And I think that the more that we can like put it out there that like you don't have to be a slave to these
yeah.
things that are hot for the moment and just like be yourself and do what you think looks good.
Yeah.
Then you'll have much better personal style, your own look. Like you don't have to slavishly follow these
exactly.
things that are like
you
hot
don't
for
have
one
to
moment.
Try so hard. Like especially with the fashion brands that and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
The ones that
like,
are made for
jeans,
Instagram.
Like all of these cutout jeans and then
yeah.
mom jeans with plastic in them.
They're
it's
literally
like,
for Instagram.
They're,
like they're sold on Instagram.
Nobody's
they are
buying these
by
things.
Instagram people.
Exactly. Like nobody's buying these things.
Yeah.
Nobody wants these things. Like go away.
The
like,
jeans with plastic though. Why do
like,
I know
why?
Exactly what you mean?
You know exactly what I'm talking about. And so do your viewers.
It's like this. It's like this genre of clothing that I feel like kind of came up in the past like few years that's like just for people to take that Instagram. But you know what I haven't tried? And like low-key, I'm very curious to try Fashion Nova.
Oh, same. Actually,
right? Like
I do not
like
knock
I'm one click away
yes,
from
I'm
ordering something on Fashion Nova.
Like, I've been sleeping on it for far too long.
I just keep seeing. And I know that it's probably super cheap and it's probably not ethically made.
Probably not.
But I just like keep
so
seeing
cute.
Stuff and I'm like, wait,
I know.
This is fashion.
And Cardi reps them. Like Cardi goes hard for Fashion Nova. So
okay, final question.
Yes.
When do you feel most beautiful?
Oh God. Okay. I was actually dreading this question.
Everyone does.
Yeah, I know. Like I was listening to your podcast with Kate Stewart. I was like, well, yeah, because that's a really hard question to ask. And I'll speak for myself mostly because I'm very self-deprecating and I grew up being very, very self-conscious and very shy, which most people, and I'm still very shy. Most people just don't realize it. Like I hide it really well. So I take issue with calling myself beautiful or thinking of myself as beautiful because of just the trauma of growing up as a trans female. And literally, like, I've had, like, in my past, I've had people, like, yell at me on the street, like, that's a man, that's a dude. And so in that moment, I'm thinking to myself, I'm so ugly, like, I'm not pretty. And
you're gorgeous.
Aww.
I mean, you are, objectively.
And it took, honestly, it took me a really long time to even, like, look realize someone that in the face. No, like, just, like, look someone in the face and say thank you, because I would always look down and be like, no, I'm not.
Yes.
Like, I would really just be like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm ugly. And also, like, in high school, I had really bad acne, so
it was just, like, girl, everyone did.
We all did. Except for those, like, unicorns, those, like, perfect girls that had perfect skin. I'm like, but anyway, I had to choose two moments in my life that I felt most beautiful.
Okay.
So the first time was when I was graduating from Harvey Milk, and we have a prom every year.
Were you prom queen?
I was prom queen.
Of course.
And I
should have known.
Still have my tiara. Aww. To this day, because, again, being... I graduated at 17. I graduated a year early, and to be a young trans woman and to have finally, like, come into myself and understood what was going on in my head and my body, to be crowned prom queen when I never even thought that would be possible, like, to even live authentically as myself, but to also be recognized as a woman and to be crown prom queen was so pivotal in my life. And
I still get
chills because it was just such a beautiful night, and it was just people embracing me and recognizing me as a woman, and it felt so wonderful. So shout out to Harvey Milk High School
That's
and
awesome.
The Hedrick Martin Institute. And then the second time that I felt most beautiful, which is actually kind of like the least beautiful moment, but was when I had my bottom surgery last year. So it was actually a year ago on April 7th.
Wow.
And I woke up and my surrogate mom was there because I didn't have any family to be there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up and I was in an excruciating amount of pain. It's literally, like, I would attribute it to, like, being hit by a truck.
Which I can't even imagine yet.
Like, oh my God, it was so painful. But it was this moment of wanting this one thing, this one thing in the world so badly, and to finally have it felt unexplainable. Like, I finally felt at peace with my body, with myself, with my spirit. Like, everything just, from the moment I walked up, everything just aligned.
Wow.
And
so powerful.
It felt like just one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. Also the most painful, but, like...
Yeah, you had that physical and spiritual alignment probably for the first time.
Yeah, like, I broke into tears, like... when I was looking at Taz, and I was just like, oh my God, finally, like, finally this happened. And shout out to Obama, because if it wasn't for Obamacare, the surgery would not have been covered under any insurance.
Mm.
So, hey, Barack and Michelle.
We miss you.
We miss you so much. Come back, please. Save us.
Seriously.
But yeah, like, those are two pivotal moments in my life that I will never forget and I will cherish for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And feel most beautiful.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much, Angelica.
Thank
Let's
you
do
for having
a
me.
Toast. This was
yes,
so
girl.
Amazing
Cheers.
Having you on.
Thank you for having me.
And I will also link to your fabulous Instagram
Perfect.
So everyone can follow you and get to know you as well.
Love
and
it.
I hope we're going out this summer.
Oh, yes.
Don't forget.
Absolutely.
I'm ready.
I will see you at the woods.
Okay.
Sometime in the summer.
I'm a Leo. My birthday's coming up.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's turn up. Let's just turn up together.
Amazing. That's what I'm looking for. My rollie wearing